Hello and welcome to episode 53 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And this week we had the pleasure of speaking to the Sandy Lion. And this was her debut podcast. And we hope Sandy loved being on our show.
Sandy is a full-time elementary school teacher and a stylist based in Toronto, where she started her journey as a creator. Back then, starting off an online brand was much more different than what it is now. And Sandy takes us through her four-year journey, landing her to her position now, where she works with big stars like Lily Singh and Humble the Poet, and she's even styled some music videos.
So not only does Sandy do all of this, but she also recently partnered with Nike to promote running in her community. So if you need something to pull your socks up, or if you want to learn a little bit about time management, you're at the right place. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show. Welcome to the show, Sandy. We're so excited to speak to you. We know that you have a meeting in an hour, so we'll skip all the faff about how we adore your work and how we've been following you for a long time and get right into it.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for reaching out to me and having me on your podcast.
So, Sandy, if we go back to the very beginning when you started having an online presence, your friends were the ones who convinced you to post your fashion ideas online, and you feel that that played a huge role in where you are today. So what was the internet like back then? You know, not that it was 50 years ago, but I'm sure that starting an online brand now is much more different than what it used to be back then.
Yes, absolutely. Back then, I feel like it was a lot more... It was more up to you, and there wasn't as much pressure. And I feel like nowadays, because everything is social media and everybody's on social media and everybody is a social media influencer, there's just so much more happening online, and you, even as a creator, you just feel so much more pressure. And back when I had started, there wasn't as much pressure. It was a lot more just what I wanted to do, and I posted at my own leisure. It was more in, like, I enjoyed it more. And I think more recently, I don't enjoy it as much, and I try to only post what really excites me, because it can be a space that can really stress you out.
Right. So were there many more people doing the similar kind of work that you're doing today back then?
From what I know, there were people doing like fashion blogging and different things of that sort back then, but definitely not to the level that they are now.
And Sandy, we say back then, can you just clarify for our listeners how long ago back then was?
So I started 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago.
And when you started 4 years ago, what were your family like? Were they just as supportive as your friends were?
Yes. My family actually didn't really understand what it was that I was doing. And I myself didn't really know. So it wasn't really something that we talked about, or it wasn't a topic of conversation. I was just doing it because, you know, I had an Instagram handle and I just posted pictures. So it wasn't really that big of a deal until they noticed that I started taking it more seriously, or I was working with other people and I was doing big projects. And that's when they realized that, okay, this is a thing. This is something that she's doing. And they were definitely supportive right from the get-go.
You know, we interviewed Amandeep Singh from Inquisitive a few months ago, and we discussed the whole idea of the arts as a career for Desis and the barriers that we have to face. And he had mentioned to us that some of his close family friends called him a doodler instead of calling him an artist. So, you know, I was just wondering if you had any kind of similar experiences within your Desi community back then.
Wow, absolutely. I've heard that story myself from Ink. He's a good friend. I definitely do agree that there is a misconception and our parents don't necessarily understand it, but I don't think that's their fault. I don't think that when they were growing up, or for them to even come to Canada and you know, go through the things that they went through for us, I don't think they understood that art is a job, or it could be a job, it could be a career, it could be whatever it is. So I don't think that they understood that. For me, things played out a little bit differently because I did I went to school, I got my master's, I became a teacher before I started doing all of this. So I guess I didn't really leave any room for my parents to have an issue with it because I had my job. I did what, you know, I put my degrees on the wall, I got my job, I fulfilled their expectations, and now I was just doing whatever I wanted to do. And, you know, they didn't really have any issue with that. But and even for me, like, I grew up dancing, and my parents have always been very open with the arts. My dad himself, he wrote poetry for a very long time, and he sang when he was younger. So they're very open to arts, but I think for them it was important for me to understand that I need to have some sort of stability in my life, because that's why they came here, to be able to create a life, you know, that was more stable than theirs.
And, you know, most Asian parents have very interesting immigration stories. But although our parents tend to exaggerate from time to time, like, you know, my dad told me when I was younger that he had £5 in his pocket when he first came to Europe. And every year that number would change. Sometimes it would be £10, sometimes it would be £2. But, you know, nevertheless, the essence of the story doesn't change. You know, he came here for a reason. So where are your parents from originally, and what brought them to Canada?
So my parents are both from Punjab. My dad is from near Moga, and he was basically set up to be the breadwinner of his family. And he was one of seven brothers and three sisters, and from a very, very, very low income family. Nobody in that family ever even dreamed of coming to Canada. So it was him. He had that on his shoulders. He was the one that was to come to Canada first and kind of step foot into this country and bring the rest of his family here. So that's kind of our story, and it was definitely a huge journey for him, going back and forth. And it was just some of the stuff I probably can't even say in this podcast because it's probably highly illegal. But they had a very, very up and down journey coming to Canada. But he was set up to pretty much be the breadwinner of the family and kind of bring everybody here. So the pressure was definitely on for him when he was 17. So he came here when he was 17, and him and my mom got married when she was 16.
And Sandy, a lot of our listeners know that I personally have quite an unhealthy obsession with sports. And the reason I have that is because it's, you know, my way of releasing steam, and it's kept me sane in, you know, the worst times of my medical degree here in Prague. And there was a time where I felt that my body had sort of customized to exercise so much that it didn't have that effect on me anymore. So I gave drawing a try. I tried something that was a bit more creative. I'm not great at it, but what I do love is the feeling of working from, you know, you start off with like a few lines on your paper, then you end up with this finished product. And that from start to finish, that feeling is quite liberating for me. You've mentioned in an interview before that you yourself use fashion and style as a way to evoke emotion and ideas. So I wanted to ask you, you know, like how did you get into design? That's the first question. And the second question is, what exactly about designing and using yourself as a canvas do you feel is liberating?
Absolutely. Good question. Well, in the beginning, I think what sort of drew me to fashion and creativity was my dad, and even my sisters. They're all very, very much into fashion. My dad is such a fashionista. He loves to dress up and, you know, dress to impress. And I think just I fed off of those things. And I realized that it was the one outlet that I could express myself in. And growing up as a teenager, I was always bullied, and I was never the cool girl. So I think because it happened to me so many times and for such a long time, I got to a point where I kind of gave up, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to do what I want to do, and I'm going to wear what I want to wear, whether people like it or not, or whether I'm being picked on for it, because it really allowed me to become a different person every day and kind of play dress up every day. And like you had mentioned, evoke my emotions through my outfits. And it was definitely a liberating experience, because for the best way to say it is just being a different person every day. Like, I really loved the idea of that, and it allowed me to escape a lot of the problems that were bothering me in during the day or with friends or, you know, at school. So being able to dress up and be somebody else allowed me to just ignore those problems and kind of persevere and push through and just express myself using an outlet that I loved.
Oh, Sandy, that's so sweet to hear that, because, you know, that's what we all want to do. When even when we're having a bad day, putting on a little bit of lipstick really helps. So, you know, I can imagine how it must have been like for you and how it must be for your followers now, who also really like your fashion sense. Speaking of which, we spoke to Vidya Walks about her fashion sense the other day, and I think I'd like to point out here that she's most definitely an undercover super stylist. And, you know, be it cutting up a sari to make trousers out of it, or pairing a plain t-shirt with a skirt that she got made out of Banarasi silk, she's just so good at improvising with fashion. And I don't know if you've had a chance to go through her website or browse through her blog, but her creativity with desi clothes is just something I've never seen before. Now, in your video on getting styled up for Diwali with Sonia Jaz, that was just so hilarious, the tumke and the shimmy that you had going on. But on the note of fashion, you know, are there any other parts of the world that inspire you and your design for clothing apart from South Asia and, you know, the Desi community?
Absolutely. Well, yes, the South Asian community definitely does inspire me in many ways. I would also say I take so many aspects of like African culture, Trinidad, Guyanese, even like Oriental cultures. Like I definitely try to incorporate those into my outfits and stuff like that. But I would say everything. Like I sometimes I get, you know, borderline stuck because I don't know if it's too much. But like I love to do things like braiding my hair, or like, you know, buying outfits from a completely different culture and just, you know, rocking them in my own way, rather in a celebration of culture. And, you know, to celebrate diversity.
And Sandy, you've also mentioned that your mom has told you that two important things in life are endurance and prioritization. And I personally believe that endurance is like a muscle. You know, it's something that you have to keep practicing. And to make this muscle stronger, you know, you have to train yourself to have the stamina to keep going on when you get knocked down. So on the note of endurance, what are the biggest obstacles you had to face in your career as a stylist?
In terms of endurance, some of the biggest obstacles that I've had to face is motivating myself to keep going, even when I notice that, you know, people might not be liking something that I do, or they might not appreciate the idea or the creativity. I have to remember why I'm doing it. And why I'm, you know, like the Kanye West, like he doesn't stop when somebody says doesn't like his ideas or doesn't like his music. He keeps going. And that's why he's who he is. And that's why he's that type of creative energy. And many times, like if I'm, whether it's a video or an outfit or a hairstyle, and I notice that, you know, people aren't liking it, or I'm losing followers, or I'm getting hate comments, I have to oftentimes remind myself that the endurance, you have to keep pushing through, you have to be true to yourself, and you have to remember why you're doing what you're doing.
And Sandy, do you manage everything about, you know, about your brand by yourself, or do you have a team of people helping you in any way?
I did have an intern, but I don't anymore. She worked with me for 2 years and was wonderful. And right now I am working by myself. And yeah, just a one-man show.
Wow, that's amazing, Sandy, with everything that you do. And, you know, speaking of prioritizing, you have so much on your plate, and knowing that you're doing this on your own, it's just wonderful. But you're just not a designer. You're also an elementary school teacher, like you mentioned earlier. And teaching is exhausting. And I know this because I remember teaching young kids English in India when I was working with an NGO for 2 years, and handling the younger ones is what gets super tiring. So how do you manage your time to work with these kids and then, you know, work on your passions outside of teaching as well?
You know what? That is definitely an ongoing challenge. I think when I was, I think I got lucky in the sense that when I was younger, I started working at a very young age. So multitasking just became a part of my life. And managing school and working a full-time job and paying bills became my life at a very young age. So when I started teaching and blogging at the same time, because I took up my first teaching job and I started my Sandy Lion business at the exact same time. So I knew what I was getting into, and I knew that eventually I would make a decision and just choose one. But it is definitely tiring, and you have to have motivation. You have to have respect for your time. You have to have a schedule. You have to take care of yourself. And those are some of the important things that I'm still learning as well. But I think I did get a little bit of a head start. So I feel like I don't feel the pressure as much as some of the folks who are trying to multitask right now. But I work full time. I'm teaching grade 3 right now. And this is the first year that I'm teaching at such a young age. For the past 2 years, I was teaching intermediate grades, like 6 and 8. But I definitely do notice the energy has been a little bit difficult to keep up, because during the day, the young ones are very needy, and you have to be on your toes all the time. And I've noticed that keeping up with my styling career after hours has been a little bit difficult. So I've been allowing myself breaks. I've been, picking up my workout schedule even more so that I have the energy to be up and running with the kids in the morning. And, you know, overall, my health is good. So those are some things that I've definitely realized this year. But it takes practice. Multitasking takes practice.
So can we go back and talk about that phase of your life when you were studying and you had a full-time job and you were paying bills? What exactly were you studying? What was your job like? What were you doing at that time?
So during high school, I was working at a clothing store for my entire high school life. And then once I graduated, in my last year of high school, I got a job at a law firm. Because I did co-op, and so the law firm hired me. So in grade 12, I was working at a law firm right after school. So school would finish at 2:40, and then I'd do 3 hours at the law firm and then go home. But then once I started my university job, my university career, for my bachelor's, I basically crammed all of my classes into 2 days so that I didn't have to quit my job and I could work 3 days of the week, 4 days of the week, because our firm was open on Saturdays, and then I'd go to school Monday and Tuesday. So that, and then when I did my master's, I did my master's abroad in the US at a particular school that offered the program on weekends, so that I could continue my full-time job during the week and go to school on the weekend.
Wow, I know now what you meant when you said that you were good at time management, even from the time you were, you know, in high school.
Yeah.
So what you do as a stylist today, that isn't really prescribed work as such, because as a teacher, you know that you'll have children waiting for you in class and you have to have a lesson plan ready, but you're building your own brand from scratch and you're doing it pretty much all by yourself. So what processes do you have in place to make sure that you don't let anything seep through the cracks when you build SKG?
That's a really good question. I feel like I might not know how to answer it, but some of the basic everyday things that I do is I make a to-do list every day. I'm very quick with responding to my emails, so I respond within the day to all emails. That I think is just a personal thing with me. I don't like things waiting. I don't like text messages waiting. I get very anxious. So I like to reply to things right away. That definitely takes away the routine administrative stuff. But I try to have a schedule where every day I'm recording a video at least, and I have content to post, and I'm trying to push my styling career as picking clients, reaching out to businesses, reaching out to other folks who I'd like to do collaborations with, and working with other management teams to help brand me and get opportunities that align with my goals.
So Sandy, if you don't respond to any of our emails within a day, we'll just assume that you don't like us.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, Sandy, if you don't mind me asking, If you work as a stylist and you do aspire to become a full-time stylist, so why are you still teaching at the moment? Does it help you in any way in your daily routine? Does it help you with your fashion maybe?
I'm still teaching for several reasons. One, because it pays my bills. Styling doesn't pay anything yet. It does pay, but it does not pay enough for me to be able to be a functioning human being in the 21st century. So I'm still trying to build up to a point where styling can pay for my life, but that's going to take time. And that's like any entrepreneur, any self-owned business, it's going to take time. 4 years is nothing. So definitely that's one of the big reasons why I'm still teaching. But another reason is because I do really love my job. I do love waking up and going to work. I love seeing my students every day. I love planning lessons. I love everything to do with teaching. And it does keep me on a strict schedule. It has me waking up every day. It has me in a routine. And I think that definitely helps me be a well-rounded human being who can multitask two jobs. If I was only doing styling, I'd probably be waking up late, going to sleep late, not managing my time as well as I do knowing that I have a full-time job. So I think, and at the end of the day, both of my jobs are teaching. Styling is still teaching in a way, and I think that's where my heart is in education. So whether I'm in the classroom or whether I'm doing it on Instagram, I just want to keep doing it.
Sandy, you're also doing some work with Nike running, if I'm not wrong. I've seen some of your Instagram stories that you do spend time working out and you do spend time taking care of your body. But you've just started something with Nike. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. So I do love working out. Actually, I wouldn't say I love working out. I love the results and I love how it makes me feel. When I'm actually in the gym, I probably hate it, and I hate my trainer when I'm in the gym, but aside from that, it's great. And yes, with Nike, I've just started my own run club. So what Nike does is they have run clubs all around the world where they basically work with people and teach them how to fall in love with running. And I've been doing a lot of work with them recently on different projects, and this was just one of those many projects where I decided to create my own run club and with a group of people. And we basically, each week, we train how to run effectively and how to incorporate running into our routine and how to love it and how, for me personally, how to be able to do it without without encountering problems with my asthma.
And Sandy, you've also styled some of Lily Singh's outfits for some big award events. And how do you feel when you see Lily, or you know anybody for that matter, strut your clothes as they walk on the red carpet or on any stage? How does what feelings go through you when this happens?
I definitely feel proud and in awe, amazed, because it does take a lot for somebody to rock one of my styles, because I wouldn't like to think that I'm a typical stylist. I don't always pull designer outfits. Sometimes I'll make them. Sometimes I'll, try to put a statement on somebody or something that's completely out of the ordinary. So it definitely does take a certain type of artist to be rocking the designs that I come up with. And so that definitely makes me feel proud, because they have the same vision as me and they want to spread the same message. And yeah, it feels great to be able to have somebody else be the canvas.
And how closely do you work with these people that you style? What's the process involved? Because some of the people you style are also really busy in their lives. So how do you make sure they're comfortable, and what kind of input do you need from their side to make the dress as perfect as possible?
So I definitely work very closely with them. For example, like with Lily, it's different with everyone. With Lily, I don't always get the chance to speak to her on a daily basis because she is so busy. But I do, I'll have an initial conversation describing what my vision is and where I'm trying to go with the outfit. And then, with Lily, she will just blindly trust me. And she's just like, whatever it is, I'm good. I'll wear whatever you tell me to wear. So in that sense, I'm a little bit more independent. But for example, if I'm working on like a music video or something and with Humble the Poet, and with that, it's a lot more day-to-day conversations, like, okay, this will be the color, this is how it should be, this is what I think, and it's just, it's a lot of back and forth, but that's because the artist also has a very, a vision that they want to present in their work, and I want to make sure that, you know, the clothing supports that vision, so it's definitely a close relationship in those sorts of situations.
And how, this is like a question that you must be bored of answering, but I have to ask you, how do you see yourself as a full-time stylist? Like, do you want to work for celebrities only, or do you want to work in the movie industry? Or maybe, you know, do you want to be the personal stylist for Desi Outsiders?
Well, definitely for you guys, but I think I see myself working a lot in hip-hop. A lot of my fashion choices and ideas have been heavily influenced by hip-hop, so I do see a long-term goal in working with celebrities and working on music videos, working on clothing lines with different companies, but I'm not really like super set out on having a strict vision. I'm open to it. I just want to work in environments that allow me to spread the message that I have and, you know, push people to be more creative and bold.
And I'm sure there are a lot of young girls right now who may be listening to this podcast, and they might feel afraid to express themselves through their own sense of fashion. And I've seen some of your amazing outfits, Sandy, but I know that I personally would be too shy to wear anything like that. But, you know, you on the other hand, you're bold, you're confident, and you really do make a statement with your dress sense. So what advice do you have for any young girl out there who may be trapped with the idea of just sticking to the norm when really inside they do want to express themselves like you do?
I think the first step is to just be okay and understand that it's a journey, and you don't have to wear something that you don't feel good in. And that's the key, finding things that you feel good in. And it's a journey, you have to go on it, and it's going to take time. It's not easy to just, you know, build up the confidence to rock something and just, you know, run out the door, but it's going to take time. And you would be surprised to see the only person holding you back is you. Like, if you were to walk out with a floral printed blazer, not as many people would notice it if you yourself allowed yourself to feel good in it. Like, it's not, like, and I feel like that's just going to take practice. That's just going to take time. And you have to allow yourself and give yourself the opportunities to test it out. And it's, the reality is, it's not going to be as big of a deal, and you won't feel as uncomfortable from other people as you will with yourself. I don't know if that makes sense, but we hold ourselves back. Like, we tell ourselves, oh, these pants won't look good on me, or this blazer, I can't wear that, it's not going to look good on me. But did you try?
And Sandy, it's really good advice that you give, because, you know, my friends have also suggested for me to wear some certain tops or trousers, and I'd be like, nah, you know, I don't think I can rock it. But did you have this problem as well when you started off, and how long did it take you for you to feel comfortable with your own sense of fashion?
It didn't take me too long, because again, when I was younger, that was my outlet. That's what I turned to feel good. So it became just a part of me. But it's a process. And for me, it was mostly during high school. And when I switched schools in the middle of my high school career, and I think in the beginning, I felt a lot more insecure. I wasn't sure what people would think of me if I dressed a certain way or if I did something. But then when I switched schools, it was a new environment. Nobody knew me. So that's when I was just like, you know, F all of this. I'm just going to wear whatever I want to wear. Nobody here knows me anyways. And I think that was where like my turning point was.
Okay, thank you so much, Sandy, for coming on our show, especially at such short notice. This has been actually so delightful talking to you.
No problem. I hope that I answered all of your questions and I hope that you guys enjoyed that.
Yeah, and I have one last question for you, Sandy. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they go about that?
You can definitely get in touch with me via email, skg03@gmail.com, or follow me on Instagram or Twitter at @thesandyline.
Fantastic. Thank you once again, Sandy. We cannot wait to see what else you have in store for us in the future.
Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to talking to you guys again.
And as always, a thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. After speaking to Sandy, at least Meenal and I want to get our acts together and work just a little harder on projects that we're as passionate about.
You can get in touch with Sandy on social media at The Sandy Lion. You can find us on Desi Outsiders too. So do send in your comments, feedback, and questions to mail@desioutsiders.com. And we'll see you next week. So until then, I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And we're The Desi Outsiders.